So retreats are on my mind because Linda and I are planning retreats. And so we made it the topic of the week for us. And this morning, or last night actually, I wasn't quite sure what to focus on about retreats. So I went to the dictionary and I realized the dictionary actually provides prompts to us for our Dharma talks, at least some of us. So I looked up the word retreat. And I found many definitions, and I'm going to play around with a few of them. So, one of them is haven, which is described as a place of safety, a place offering favorable opportunities or conditions. So, Linda and I have worked hard at discerning what kind of structure at online retreats provides the most favorable opportunities or conditions. And, I like that wording, the word conditions, So I pulled that one out. But we've determined that too much time online on Zoom is not conducive. Many of us are just, whatever, Zoom fatigue, they call it, right? So we build in quite a bit of free time during these online retreats. And during the retreat we're going to be having the last weekend in April, we will focus, really, this will be part of the focus of the retreat, is discerning for yourself. How do you best use this free time? What is the best structure or schedule for your retreat? Really, what do you want to retreat from in your daily life? And what do you want to integrate, retreat into at the activities of your daily life? But more generally, has meditation become a haven for you? A place of safety, a place offering favorable opportunities and conditions? I feel like I keep hearing that more and more as I hear you and other of my people I work with, excuse me, speaking about their meditation practice. And I wonder, in my earlier years of meditation, it certainly wasn't a haven. It was certainly a place where I learned a lot. It was certainly good for me in countless ways, but it wasn't a haven. And so it made me wonder if the encouragement to be gentle and friendly and curious really has been the conditions that have made meditation such a pleasant space. I feel that too. And really, I feel it as a refuge. This would be true about retreats and meditation in particular, a refuge from the harshness and the violence that can surround us politically, climatically, and for some interpersonally. And you could probably add to that list. That's what came immediately to mind. So there's one definition. A haven. Another definition, a hideaway. It's an interesting one. So, what are we hiding away from? The usual distractions that call us, though when we're home, they might be calling quite loudly. And when I think about hideaway, it certainly isn't hiding away, at least not in reflective meditation, from the usual concerns of our life and the usual thoughts and feelings that we experience. But maybe hiding away in some way, what I would think to dip into something deeper, something more resonant. Now, here is another definition I just thought I'd play with, which is resort. So you could head out to a resort. That's your choice. You have a choice about at online retreats where you are. But if you go to a real resort, what are they called? The ones that are all inclusive and have all these activities? Destination resort, that's it. You'll probably have more distractions to sort through. Another definition, sanctuary. And this is a really interesting question. How do you make your home and your life at home a sanctuary for this, for the retreat or maybe in general? When you go away to retreat, to retreat centers, they really do, in my experience, have a sense of sanctuary built in. Though when you join us online, you are challenged again with how to make your home and your life at home into a kind of sanctuary, at least for these days. That I've found that when I make it, that's interesting. I just hit on a new thought that when I do online retreats and make my home a sanctuary time and time again, my home feels like a more sanctuary-like when I am not on retreat, that something gets infused into my home life. Another definition, shelter. Maybe from the hindrances, that's what first came to mind. And then I went to my dictionary definition here, glossary, excuse me, unconventional glossary definition, which you can find at the Pine Street Sangha website and probably other places as well, like the book. So consider what hinders you from meditating. When you can't get yourself to meditate, take some time to journal or reflect about what's getting in the way. After you have a sense of what hinders you, you can look up the five hindrances that are commonly taught in Buddhism. So, okay, I kind of cut and pasted things here, so I can't find my next part. I'm going to have to really start going impromptu. And it might not make quite as much sense. So we call our approach, this is from the book, we call our approach befriending the hindrance. It seems to me that knowing the hindrances and becoming friends with them opens up a more creative relationship with them. Then we don't have to stop them or let them go. They let go of us. And I might add, now, as we're curious about them, we learn from them. So, you know, you might, you know, we didn't list the more common ones, but the list is the five hindrances are spoken of as restlessness, anger, strong desire, dullness, and doubt. Now, the words are sometimes a bit different, but those are common words. And they're really hindrances to being able to meditate. So on retreat, in a way, because we schedule in the meditation, there might not be quite the same hindrance to being able to meditate. You've got a group, you've got a structure, you've got a schedule. But then another term that, you know, is Buddhist, very Buddhist-like, is sheltering from samsara. And samsara is a Pali term that is tricky because it usually refers to the endless cycle of rebirth. And that really does then bring us to that whole teaching on rebirth. But I take a more secular definition here, which is the end of the rebirth of the negative patterns, those that mindlessly repeat. And, you know, conversely, there seems to be almost, and it feels magic, like, I don't mean it. I'm sure it's not magic, like, I'm sure I just don't understand the conditions that are going on, but it feels magic, like a process that can happen when we become more aware of our repetitive destructive patterns. It seems like, at least I have more choice about whether to repeat them. I become more and more aware. And then when they happen, I go, oh. And then there's this moment where maybe I have a choice to do something else. Though I must say, this shift can take quite a bit of awareness, courage. I mean, the courage to be with our negative repetitive patterns, and patience. So finally, refuge. That's a very Buddhist term. And that is a definition for retreat. It's refuge. And I'm, again, reading from my unconventional glossary. Refuge is a place that gives protection or shelter from danger, trouble, and unhappiness. Actually, that's the Cambridge Dictionary. My definition is Buddhists take refuge in the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. I think of the Buddha as a human being who awakened, not a god. If he found relief and meaning this way, it's possible that I can too. When this is accompanied by an understanding of the teachings, the Dharma, and reliable spiritual friends and teachers, the Sangha, you'll find refuge from some of your habitual troubles and unhappiness. So that's the definition in my glossary. I hope that's true for you, that by taking refuge in what we're doing here today, you're finding some refuge from your habitual troubles and unhappiness. And finally, I'm going to end the Dharma talk with another quote from the book. Curiously, awakening to the challenges in our life also awakens us to everything else, most notably to all kinds of beauty, aesthetic, interpersonal, and existential. Because life contains a lot more than suffering, we live, we love, we thrive, we flourish. Knowing this deeply through our experience is a refuge. And that I will end the talk there.